Welcome to AM Best Audio.
This year, the solar industry continued its rapid growth trajectory, fueled by the Inflation Reduction Act and increasing demand for clean energy. Along with that growth comes the growing need for data to inform decisions, reliance measures to protect assets, collaboration among solar, battery energy storage systems, and renewable insurance thought leaders, and recognition that the clean energy future requires mutual understanding between operators protecting assets and underwriters pricing risk, according to KWH Analytics' sixth annual solar risk assessment. I'm Lori Chortis for AmBest TV, and joining us now to discuss that is KWH Analytics CEO Jason Kaminski. Jason, welcome. It's great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Laurie. It's great to be here.
Jason, what's driving continued growth in the solar industry, and what new opportunities or developments have we seen in the sector this year?
Great. Well, let's start with the renewable segment. It really is at its core driven by economics. So renewables today are the cheapest form of power, and it's really the largest macroeconomic opportunity of our generation. So if you look at the stats for 2023, 81% of new grid additions were solar, storage, and wind. So it's really, if you look at what's going in the ground, at least here in the U.S., really driven by the renewable energy segment. And the forecasts are that we're going to double the amount of infrastructure in the ground in the next 5 years. It's the past 20 combined. So although we've been a fast growth segment, we're continuing to be a fast growth segment. It's certainly fueled or enhanced by the Inflation Reduction Act. I wouldn't say that that is necessarily a make or break law, but it certainly really added a lot of clarity and long-term planning for the industry, which has been a really nice benefit for us. And the other component here is the demand, right? With the growth of AI, with the growth of data centers, and the shift to electrifying really everything, including our vehicle infrastructure, just electricity demand is growing. So you look at the supply, the demand, it's really a phenomenal segment. And what we're seeing now is a more emerging important theme is also the addition of battery storage, just as the amount of penetration on the grid of these more variable assets is increasing. You need a storage to help add some grid stability.
What new or evolving challenges does the solar industry now face, and what's needed to address or alleviate those challenges or hurdles?
Great, it's a good question. So let me start with some of the insurance challenges, and I'll lead with NatCat events. So solar in particular is an interesting segment because it's decorrelated from traditional property risks. You're not putting these in high value land zones, not along the coast, not in Florida, but there's a lot in the middle of the country where land is cheap and the sun is good. So hail and recently fire have been the emerging risks that we're paying attention to. And there's some irony that the assets that are being deployed to address climate change are also exposed to climate-driven disasters. Aside from, I'll call it the core property risks, things that likely a lot of other infrastructure is facing. So supply chain constraints, in particular transformers, are an emerging issue. Trade risk, there's been a lot of focus on onshoring the manufacturing for a lot of this equipment. And as such, there's tariffs and other sort of regulations for imports. And then bringing in a skilled workforce as we are increasing the velocity of deployment out in the field, the need for skilled labor, for skilled electricians, skilled welders, sort of all of the kind of trades that you need, and bringing them in, training them, and helping educate them about everything about the industry and where we've been and best practices.
Well, speaking of risks that you're seeing in the industry, you recently released a report called the Solar Risk Assessment. Can you tell us a little bit about that and why you published this report?
Absolutely. So this is the sixth year we published the Solar Risk Assessment, and it's really designed to be 14 one-page articles that are all data-driven, and they're technical insights for a non-technical reader. So it originally started, my background is banking and finance. So that was sort of the target audience, is a banker who understands the segment, maybe an underwriter who understands the segment, but is not out in the field day to day. And this year we cover three categories of risk. So there's a section on extreme weather risk, there's a section on operational risk, and for the first time we have a section on battery storage risk this year. So it's been great to include contributors from across the value chain, including some from the insurance segment, like Lloyd's and Alliance contributed this year. So it discusses everything from risk mitigation, like hail stow, to operational challenges like forecasting soiling if you're a solar asset owner. And it's really one of the things that makes KWH a little bit of a different underwriter is that we're industry people that have entered insurance. So my background has been in the renewable space 20 years. A lot of the team has similar backgrounds between solar finance. So we're taking a lot of our key relationships, asset owners, testing labs, federal labs, and bringing the best emerging risk insights into a consolidated place to really put emphasis behind that education that I referred to, right? The risks are changing year to year, but the industry is still growing and evolving, and the technology is still changing. And it's really critical that everyone is aware of those changes and able to adapt to it.
Well, in line with that and talking about adapting and addressing these various risks and other challenges that you talked about, what are you seeing today in terms of collaboration and innovation among industry leaders to address and overcome these risks and challenges?
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, that's exactly why you put out the solar risk assessment, as you alluded to. It's important to stay on top of these latest trends within the industry. You know, another area that is really important right now is that the Inflation Reduction Act did put a lot of financing support and federal support around domestic manufacturing. So we're seeing a lot of new plants coming online, a lot of new technology coming out of those plants and making their way eventually into the field. And it's actually been a lot of collaboration between the developers, the manufacturers and suppliers. There's actually a big tax element to it. So understanding how those provisions may or may not satisfy the tax code requirements. It brings all sorts of components in the industry together, all sorts of stakeholders in the industry together to really help establish and expand the domestic market for the manufacturing side of the equipment. You know, and then beyond that, I'd say we're seeing innovation in building more resilient assets. That's been a big theme, certainly for KWH and within the industry more broadly, is as the Nat Cat exposures increase, as we build more in Texas, layering in some of the resiliency factors into the technology, into the operational practices as well.
And what about in terms of insurance coverages? What are you seeing in that area? Can you talk about the growing need for property and climate insurance and perhaps other types of coverages to address these risks?
Sure, yeah. We think of insurance really as a form of capital that supports the deployment of this infrastructure asset. And we were really pulled into the property space, frankly, by the banks that were concerned about the challenging insurance environment that was underpinning their credit facilities. And at the end of the day, if it's not an insurable risk, it's not a financeable risk. So the insurance has really moved from, I'll call it a check the box requirement, well up the credit value chain to now being a really core form of capital to support the deployment of capital, of other forms of capital into the space. So it's putting a lot of pressure on assets, both from sort of their ability to cash flow, as well as frankly, where these assets are going in the ground and how the developers are thinking about different geographies. You know, layered on top of that, forecasting the Nat Cat exposures, I'd say remains a challenge. A lot of these are secondary perils, and honestly, the data that underpins and supports the models, as it relates to renewable energy at least, is still generally lacking. But one of my colleagues, Nicole Thompson, one of the articles in the solar risk assessment, we did an analysis about how can data-driven modeling versus, I'll call it non-data-driven modeling, compare. And we see up to 3x differential both ways, high and low, on what the Nat Cat models are showing, you know, without really strong data underpinning it. So it's, you know, the insurance is critical and is in some ways becoming a bigger pain point for the growth of the renewable segment, probably driven by property. But as you said, there's tax insurance, there's warranty insurance, certainly in other emerging technologies, hydrogen, electrical vehicle infrastructure. We're seeing insurance really play a key role within that project finance structure.
Customize your data experience. BestLink now offers an interactive company dashboard that provides company-level intelligence in a fast, user-friendly interface featuring interactive tables, charts, and Sparkline performance histories. Customize the dashboard tiles to prioritize the insurer ratings, data, and analytics that best support your workflow. AM Best. Our insight, your advantage.
Well, looking specifically at property insurance. I've read that property insurance premiums climbed anywhere between 15% to more than 40% in the solar industry last year, creating a big concern for contractors, developers, investors, and others. Are you seeing a similar trend this year? And if so, what's driving that?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Laura. It's been, you know, really since 2019, I would say, as an industry, we've seen rate increases, but also on a risk-adjusted basis, increases even more. So we've seen large deductibles introduced, we've seen sublimits for Nat Cat, we've seen terms and conditions change as well. So this year, we are seeing rates flatten out, particularly for the less exposed, less Nat Cat exposed assets and infrastructure. You know, hail continues to be the biggest risk, and it's where we think our modeling is in particular very strong. And, you know, I think for developers, particularly in Texas or the Midwest, where there's good sun, light regulation, cheap land, the Nat Cat exposures are just very high. So we see a lot of infrastructure going into that area. And just as people are managing aggregations within their book and trying to figure out the modeling and pricing, that's still an area of acute focus, I'd say. But on the whole, it's beginning to moderate.
Jason, what role do insurers play in the ongoing energy transition?
That's right. So earlier you alluded to climate insurance, and it's an emerging segment that we think is really important. When you look at sort of the insurance opportunities more broadly within, I'll call it the climate space, these are, I mean, from an infrastructure capital perspective, trillion-dollar industries that are growing very rapidly. It's sort of amazing to look at the amount of capital going into the ground. So there's all sorts of opportunities from a risk transfer solution standpoint, whether that's the traditional property casualty, you know, I touched on these earlier, whether it's sort of the tax and reps and warrants, or whether it's warranty insurance for newer newer forms of technology going in the ground. So we see, again, insurance as able to support innovation, able to support the deployment of infrastructure. And insurers really have a key role of being a thought partner and a business partner for the businesses that are out there building this asset class. And it's a tremendous opportunity for insurers. So we operate as a mission-driven company, is what motivates me to get up in the morning. But honestly, it's just a massive economic opportunity, which is why we're seeing so much interest from our backers, as well as just from other carriers in the market as well.
Wonderful. How can investing in resilient solar site design and maintenance help renewable energy project owners reduce insurance costs in high-risk zones?
Right. So we see really in the last, I'll be shocked to hear the stat, in the last couple years only have people begun thinking about resilient infrastructure from a physical asset perspective. As insurance costs have gone up and retentions have increased, it's become a lot deeper area of focus from an innovation perspective. So one of the big areas of discussion now is what we call hailstow. So if you're tracking the panels throughout the day really to optimize energy production, you can also tilt them when you think a hailstorm is coming or when an alert comes out to get them out of the way of the hail and have a glancing blow instead of a direct hit. So we're seeing a lot of innovation there, the steepness of the panels, the thickness of the glass, the strength of the glass. And every event that happens, we're learning from how is it working, what's the right angle, still like very early days. And often, honestly, how to operationalize it has proven challenging. Some of the articles in the solar risk assessment this year touch on that technology, on invisible cracks in the cells underneath the glass and hits on the module frame, which used to not be an issue, but are emerging issues. So it's really an active area of, I'll call it research. Beyond that, you know, elevating equipment out of floodplains, keeping control of the vegetation and the grass and in fire season. There's a lot that one can do to manage the risk. And we see it really having very strong correlations with the losses and the loss profile that these assets are exposed to. So it's something that we pay a lot of attention to. Obviously the location matters, but what one is doing to control the risk matters a heck of a lot as well.
You talked earlier about AI. How are rapidly evolving technologies like AI, machine learning, predictive analytics, and others, how are they being used in the renewable energy space today? And are those technologies influencing the development of specialized insurance products for the sector?
Good question. So AI, I'd say, is still It's an area of interest. I'd say candidly, still early, like many other segments of figuring out how to best apply it. You know, internally, we are beginning to apply it to our workflows and unleashing it on our big data set to see what can we learn from it and how to improve. I'd say it's probably similar within the industry more broadly. So you do see it from an energy forecasting perspective, from, you know, battery controlling, when should you discharge and recharge on the grid. But it's that whole segment is evolving so quickly that I think we haven't yet seen it be radical transformation, but we're seeing companies begin to experiment with it and put it out in the field.
Well, Jason, I'm going to ask you to take out your crystal ball for a moment. What is your outlook for the solar industry for the remainder of 2024 and as we move into the new year in 2025?
Good question. So, you know, there's nothing that's really going to stop the deployment of this infrastructure. The industry has been very good about adapting to anything that's thrown at it. So I'm forecasting continued strong growth, more domestic content, but continued strong growth, particularly in the utility scale segments. This is the larger grid infrastructure that's typically more remote. We are going to see increases of battery storage, somewhat enabled by the Inflation Reduction Act, which now allows standalone battery storage. But just as those costs decline and the needs on the grid increase, we'll see more of that. Unfortunately, probably some ongoing supply chain and policy challenges, but I think we'll be able to work through them. And an ongoing focus on how to use data, especially within this insurance space, and how to use it to better manage risk and how to inform our clients about operationalizing their best practices out in the field.
Jason, this has been so informative, and thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you so much for having us, Lori.
That was KWH Analytics CEO Jason Kaminsky. For AM Best TV, I'm Lori Chortis.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.